Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slams it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect. Garland went to the lane, locked the Mobley. Pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! With the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. The Cleveland Cavaliers dropped what I would argue is their most disappointing game of the season against the New York Knicks. And we're starting off today's podcast with a little bit more disappointing news. We got some injury updates for you guys. Donovan Mitchell received a PRP injection to his knee and will miss the next three games. Max Strus is out with a knee injury against Boston. Caris LeVert and Isaac Okoro are questionable. And, you know, let's round it out with myself. I got my Achilles finally looked at today after 3 weeks. The tendon is back together without surgery, so I have avoided surgery. I'm very happy with that. I got to remove one of my heel lifts in the boot today, so the tendon is starting to stretch out a little bit. And let me tell you, there is some pain, there is discomfort, and it was a helpful reminder that sometimes progress means pain, discomfort, and things that feel like setbacks, just like last night's game against the New York Knicks. Joining me today to discuss is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Justin.
We got no food, we got no jobs, our pets' heads are falling off!
Our pets' heads are falling off, Justin. You know, it's been a rough 12 hours or so. Cavs should have won that game. You know, I think they'd probably tell you that. Knicks down Brunson, down Randall, down Mitchell Robinson. They weren't down Josh Hart, who is developing a penchant for breaking my heart with ridiculous step back jumpers at the worst possible time. And of course we have some jerk from New York here to join us to yuck it up at our expense.
Just miserable. You know, joining us today, good friend of the podcast, one of my favorite people to talk to, Andrew Claudio from Knicks Film School. Andrew, how you doing, buddy? I see
he's
smiling.
Dancing. Look at him. This scumbag's dancing.
So I feel bad because as a
no,
Knicks
you
fan,
don't.
Okay, I feel like 44% bad, okay, which I believe is the number of threes the Cavs took last night. I feel somewhat bad because I know the pain of going through a team that's had some bad injury luck, which has been my life for the last month and a half. Memo to all basketball teams out there, don't play the Miami Heat. You just won't be healthy for a month afterwards. Like, I hear the news about Donovan Mitchell. You don't want that. Like, we were talking about this the other day, Justin, when you came at Knicks Film School. I would love a scenario where we finally get to see these two teams at full strength. We turn injuries off on 2K. Honestly, I wish the playoffs was like that. So to that extent, like, it does not bring me joy to see Donovan Mitchell, like, not play last night. It obviously did not bring me joy the first minute of the game where I wondered if my season mattered anymore.
Your season, like the immediate run, like when you're seeing an Achilles, you go like, those are the, like, could be the whole thing, you know, kind of injuries.
I don't want to make this an NFL podcast, but I'm a Jets fan who was in the building for week one on Monday Night Football when Aaron Rodgers went four plays before that season ended. So yeah. I obviously had
to feel sorry for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm also, the Knicks did win last night. So you can stop feeling bad for me at that extent, because that's the silver lining, that from that moment that Brunson went down and like the game just stopped mattering. The season was kind of on life support. And then you saw the Knicks turn the whole game around. And obviously we'll talk about what transpired the rest of the day. And then the Knicks got some good news today. It's been a wild roller coaster in the last 24 hours for Knicks fans, which I'm sure you all would love to hear more about here on this podcast.
No, honestly, I am happy that it wasn't as serious as it looked, because normally when you see an injury like that, I am not used to ever seeing good news after that. Mm-hmm. And like, I share your emotion. I want to play the Knicks fully healthy. We talked about it when I was on your podcast to preview this game, where we didn't really preview the game at all because we said there's not going to be any macro takeaways from this game. You know, we just kind of talked about what this rivalry is, what the matchup can be and whatnot. But, you know, when the Cavs come up short the way they did against the Knicks without the Knicks, essentially, like that's going to lead to a lot of kind of the conversations, a lot of the concerns. And honestly, like, I don't blame any of the fans for feeling that way. Like, that's an incredibly frustrating loss. And one of the things that we talked about on that, on your podcast, and I want to start this off by talking about, was, you know, the Cavs record against teams above 500 this year. I had talked about how they've really struggled more with the middle and taking care of business against teams that they should beat. Versus top 10 teams in net rating, the Cavs are fifth in the NBA. Versus the middle 10, it's eighth, and bottom 10, it's 12th. And when you look at the 14 and 18 that the Cavs are against teams above 500, there's four games that stand out. First, the Knicks without the Knicks, as I said. There's the loss to the Miami Heat without Bam, without Tyler Hero, where the Cavs were at home and they just did not come out with the focus they needed. And there's two losses against the Sixers without Embiid. They beat Philly shorthanded without Donovan Mitchell against Embiid. But then the two games without Embiid, the Cavs dropped both of those games. I think Tobias Harris didn't play in one of those. And if you just took care of business in those games against good teams that were shorthanded, you would be 18 and 14 versus teams over 500 rather than the other way around. So I think seeing the Cavs not kind of come out really with the seriousness that you would have expected, given the bad blood between these teams, that to me is more my disappointment more than what this means for the matchup necessarily.
It kind of, just to jump in, it kind of reminded me of the season opener against the Celtics when Hayward broke his leg. Like, I think the whole energy in the room was like, oh, this is like, everyone was like a little off. You know, even the commentary was a little off. The crowd was a little off. It was like, you know, it felt like one of those, like, because again, like to Justin's point, when you see a guy go down non-contact or looks like non-contact, leg splays out, you go, well, there's the year for this whole team. So, like, yeah. I think the vibes were off from the get-go, but like, you got to credit the Knicks for showing up ready. And like, you know, they're a team that is, it's not like they're playing well shorthanded as of late, you know, but they just kept fighting and they won. But to your point, Justin, Cavs are making a habit of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, so it's funny you say that, Carter, about how they aren't playing well of late. Cause it's 100% accurate. Like their defense has just fallen off a cliff. It's funny how much a lot's been made in New York of the starting five Tibbs has gone to, which is Precious Achiuwa at the four, a true center, Josh Hart. And like, there's just no spacing. Like Brunson has no room to operate. And, you know, to the naked eye, you're like, this isn't a lineup that can make sense offensively. But I don't need to tell Cavs fist to the Cavs fans this, to the benefit of offensive rebounding, the Knicks have actually had a pretty effective offensive rating over this stretch without Precious Achiuwa, without Mitchell Robinson, without Julius Randle, without like a healthy Isaiah Hartenstein. So it's really the defense that's fallen off a cliff. They're toward the bottom of the league in that. The funny part about this game on if they had lost this game, they would have fallen to 6-9 since the big injury started. The Julius Randle and the OG Anunoby injury happened. And that feels like it should be so much worse because of who they've played and who they've been playing. Like, these are they're at spot 10, 11, and 12 on the depth chart at the moment.
Right.
And they made two midseason trades. Like, they consolidated twice, and yet, you know, they've still been able to tread water. So, like, I agree. Like, there's just been games where I know early on, oh, this is a team that is going to take advantage of the shorthanded team. And yet, I think this is what New York has at least taken from the last 24 hours, is the testament to the fight that this team can show, that Brunson even goes down. You're missing your entire opening day starting five, and you're still able to pull out a win.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing to me was, and I had tweeted about this, it seemed like, you know, both teams after the Brunson injury were shell-shocked for a while. Like, the energy was down. You know, the Cavs players talked about it after the game. But I thought the Cavs actually woke up. Like, I thought in the second quarter, they woke up, they did what they needed to do, they took the lead. And I was sitting there, I was like, okay, well, you've got over kind of that malaise, you recalculated, you figured out, all right, this is how we're going to play, this is who's going to be out there for the Knicks. And then I thought they came out flat after the half. And that was really the most disappointing thing was, you know, I can understand losing energy in the building and not coming out, you know, with the same fire because Brunson went down. But the Knicks just responded after that. You responded, you came back, and then you come out flat again. And I think that was definitely the most disappointing thing about it, because you would, like I said, you would think that this is a matchup that they would be getting up for. And you touched on the rebounds. I want to get your thoughts on how that impacted the game, because I feel like there's been a disproportionate amount of conversation about that game in particular and the offensive rebounds. But I want your take on this, Andrew.
So the Knicks it wasn't a crazy possession battle win that the Knicks had. This wasn't Mitchell Robinson in the playoffs. You know, I think, and this is actually more a question I have for you guys, because I've heard the word disappointment and disappointing be mentioned a couple times. And I promise I'm not going to, like, I can be the a-hole New Yorker if you want, but I'll try to be.
I'll be a
measured a-hole New Yorker tonight, if you'd like to. So, like, is the disappointment that it was Josh Hart again, that it, like, the Knicks went to Boyan at the four and that was their effective lineup, and they just, like, it was Josh Hart was their rebounding impact. Like, the fact that they were out rebounded again, but, like, the Mitch who dominated the playoffs wasn't there. Isaiah Hartenstein's been playing on one leg for a month. Jericho Sims is up like a 13th man. Like, what's the most disappointing part about it?
The part that was disappointing about it, and when I alluded to this when I was on your podcast, and Carter and I came back from the All-Star break where we were talking about what we fear the most with each of these matchups. And my answer versus the Knicks was themselves, that they were going to get out of their games and they weren't going to execute. That's my disappointment. Like, the Cavs had more than enough to win. The Knicks were insanely shorthanded. And it's not about the rebounds, because the Knicks averaged 13 offensive rebounds per game. They got 10. The Cavs got 10 offensive rebounds themselves. Why was there a rebounding discrepancy? Because the Cavs missed so many shots. They were defensive rebounds, right? Like, if you're making your shots, you're not going to have that discrepancy. I don't think it was a toughness thing. Like, yes, Josh Hart is a terrific rebounder, but he was basically sucking up all the defensive rebounds that the Knicks bigs would have been getting. He only had one offensive rebound, and it came late in the fourth quarter where, a three-pointer that was way off ended up coming off the rim, and it landed to him at the three-point line. It's not like he was beating up the Cavs bigs inside to get second possessions. That was the only offensive rebound that he got, and the Knicks didn't get a whole lot of them. I think people, because of that being kind of their way to identify physicality, that's what people are leaning on, when that really wasn't the story of the game. I thought, you know, the Cavs' physicality offensively was lacking a lot of the time. I thought, you know, Evan Mobley trying to post up certain guys or getting out of his game, disrupting the flow of the offense. Like, there were so many instances where the Cavs weren't, you know, getting to loose balls and the 50-50 possessions and all that kind of stuff that the Knicks were beating them at. That's what I'm most disappointed about. It's not the rebounding or anything like that. I felt like they didn't come out like this was a big matchup. And even with who had the Knicks had missing,
is incredibly important for the standings. It was, you know, tiebreaker on the line, and you have that playoff history. I just, the lack of focus in that particular matchup, that's what was disappointing me. What about you, Carter?
Yeah, I just feel like the reality is, like, you lost to the Knicks, but you didn't lose to the Knicks. You know, you lost to Precious Achiuwa. You lost to Jericho Sims. You lost to guys that really, you know, shouldn't be playing in your ballpark. And the Cavs were not fully healthy. Obviously, it stinks to not have Donovan and Karras, but, like, certainly more healthy. I think the bigger frustration I have here is that the offense against the Knicks just has not been figured out yet. They have not, whether no matter what levers they've pulled from a process perspective, because, like, there was some good process offensively. You know, Sam Merrill goes nuts. Darius, has 10 in the fourth quarter. They have little pockets of success. But last year in the playoffs, the Cavs had by far the worst offensive rating in the postseason with 101.9. Would you boys like to venture a guess as to what the Cavs' offensive rating against the Knicks in their three games is this season?
I know it's not good. One of our film guys put out the stats yesterday, including the last since that game two when the Cavs went off. It's been pretty bad.
Yeah, all I know is that they haven't eclipsed 100 points in one of these matchups yet.
Yeah,
their net rating is 100, so they actually have a worse offensive rating in the regular season against the Knicks than they did in the playoffs. Now, plenty of context. No Darius or Jarrett in the first two games. No Donovan or Karras in this one.
Yeah.
I get it. But still, you know, again, like, given the personnel that the Knicks had in this one, you just need to find success. This is not a good defensive Knicks team right now. Mm-hmm. And whether you're just missing, it's tough. It's a three-game sample. I understand all the context that makes you go, okay, well, you know, like, George Niang missed like six wide open threes.
Yeah.
Like, and the offensive rating would look better if he made three or four of those, like he has in his career.
Yeah.
However, even two.
Yeah.
However, it's just hard to shake the feeling that, like, the team just kind of has their number right now. And there's only one way to prove that they don't. And it's play better and win games. And I think that's why Cavs fans are so disheartened.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Andrew, was there anything you noticed with the Knicks defense that kind of stood out to you that could lead to the Cavs struggling as much as they did?
So it's a very minor thing that I don't fully subscribe to all the time, but part of the way the Knicks are constructed is like Brunson plus defenders, right? Like that's the go-to move. And obviously I had no idea how they were going to score points yesterday, but this is where I thought they moved the ball really well, ran some Chicago actions. They
didn't have to score that many.
Well, like, but I honestly thought they were going to struggle to get to 80, let alone 107 because of who was on the floor, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I focused more on the offensive side of the ball. What I will say that I noticed it at some point in the third quarter when the Knicks made their second run, because like you said, I think we all were kind of collectively what's going to happen now that we're thinking about the bigger picture with Brunson. And the fact that you don't have Brunson to attack anymore, you don't have that player to target and get him in switches and get him in pick and roll.
Deuce is awesome, by the way.
He's a revelation, man. The Knicks traded quickly in the Ananobi trade, right? And the calculation was like, all right, this opens the door for Quentin Grimes. And the player that's stepped up from the 2022 draft was Deuce McBride. And like the guy had a three-point, a hitch in his three-point shot for the majority of his career. And now it seems like he's figured out a consistent three-point shot. He shot 40% over the last week. He was shooting at an unsustainable 50% for the longest time and then finally came back down to earth.
Wouldn't that
be nice? But right. Like if only you were Kyle Korver after being in the G League for a couple of years. But like to your point, I thought because Tibbs kind of left him on an island with Darius and I thought Darius figured him out and the Cavs were running him off screens a ton and Deuce just had to chase him around. But that still made it a one-on-one with Darius. So you could have your plus defenders kind of honor everybody else. And I actually thought they paid attention to Sam Merrill more in the second half. I'm sure if I went and rewatched the film, Merrill had better looks than I'm giving him credit for. But down the stretch,
he doesn't need great looks to hit them either.
To your point, like there's that one stretch, that one rebound that the Cavs got, the offensive rebound where it was like an alley-oop that went off the backboard
and
it
hit
two Knicks hands. It was the best chest pass that Sam Merrill got all night because it landed in his hand at the top of the three-point arc. But then there's the other one where he literally dribbles around DiVincenzo like with the ball and it becomes a pull-up three. And it's you have to find him. But I thought the Knicks did find him better in the second half. The main takeaway I have as far as the defensive side of the ball, Justin, is that they just had better defenders. That like they had a plus defender on the court majority of the night.
Yeah.
When Boyan was on the floor, it was a little different. But this is where I have a bit of an Evan Mobley question for you guys because they just didn't take advantage of Boyan throughout the night. Now, part of that was maybe the threes they were taking, but where you don't really need to take advantage of them.
I didn't think Evan had a good night. I didn't think he had a particularly good night defensively, even kind of jumping out and getting fouls and things like that. Like it didn't feel like the most comfortable game. And it's interesting. So, you know, the first matchup between these teams this season, obviously, you know, Jared and DG weren't playing. Karis wasn't playing either. And the Knicks blitzed the hell out of Donovan. They really made him uncomfortable. There's no other ball handlers there. And then the second game at Madison Square Garden, Karis came back for that game. And I think you saw the benefit of having that second ball handler, a guy that can get to the rim and stuff like that. The Cavs, actually, I felt like they were prepared for the Knicks to blitz Garland a whole lot and get the ball out of his hand. Like you look at it, Mobley, 6 assists, Allen, 6 assists. That kind of short roll playmaking wasn't there in the playoffs last year. And that was one of the biggest points of failure in the offense. So I thought they actually did a good job in those spots. But I thought when Mobley would pick and choose when to kind of isolate and attack guys, there wasn't a whole lot of rhyme or reason or flow to it, right? Like he wasn't really catching the ball with advantage and attacking a destabilized defense, you know, trying to post up Josh Hart, but not Boyan. I just didn't think it was the most effective game for him. And even though he ended up with more of the rebounds, I thought Jared Allen was actually competing more in this game, like from a physicality standpoint. But I mean, when you look at, okay, what's the biggest point of failure for the offense? Yes, it hurt to not have another ball handler out there. I think Darius's inability right now to have a game within the three-point arc is concerning. We talked about it before, but I think, you know, he's not really throwing his body into the shot blocker to throw off their timing and finishing like he was earlier in the year. That was one of the major areas for growth was he was getting to the line more. His field goal percentage on drives was phenomenal. His finishing at the rim was phenomenal. And then you look at these last three games, he's made 20 threes and he's made 4 shots within the three-point arc. Mm. Like that is like staggering. I love
that he asked him to shoot more threes
and the monkey paw curls.
And
so you didn't have any rim pressure, right? You didn't have Donovan there. You didn't have Karis there. But then the other thing was, okay, if you're going to stagger the big man pairing, the importance of that power forward when you're staggering the bigs is really, really, really high, right? Like, you got to have those guys delivering. And they got bad games from George Niang. They got bad games from Dean Wade. And they got bad games from Max Strus. Those three went a combined 2 of 19 from three, or no, 2 of 19 from the field. And like, that's just not going to cut it, right? Like, that's supposed to be the lineups where you have a little bit more juice offensively and you can kind of unstick the offense. And it just didn't click.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know, man. Like, again, I think they're sure their decision on the short roll was better. I still think, like, they combined for 12 assists and 3 turnovers. Like, that's a great, you know, line for your starting bigs to do. But, like, I think that line looks better than their playmaking was.
I agree.
There is something about these stupid orange and blue uniforms that makes them lose all touch on their big-to-big lobs. I don't know if you know this, Andrew. They don't throw the ball like that hard off the backboard while trying to lob it to each other against anyone else.
The ESPN broadcast did say it was intentional when Jared banked it off the glass.
Yeah, that's nice to hear. Yeah. That's a nice sentiment. Yeah.
I do wonder if, and this may just speak to your point of Carter about the matchup being just somewhat difficult, that the Knicks are like the only team that's like, you know what? The solution to our problems is another center. You know, like that is just like Tibbs's ethos and his like his religion is rim protection. So when you have a bouncy center like Mitchell Robinson and Jericho Sims, and honestly, you want to talk about defensive things I noticed, Justin, but like, so it's 99-93 and Hartenstein comes back in the game and Garland hits that three to make it 99-96. And then there's just like, Hartenstein had his best like 4-minute stretch in a month, and that rim protection just really showed. So I wonder if just the Knicks ethos of that is going to force the Cavs to take more threes, which is what you saw in this game, and makes that rim game that the Cavs normally succeed at just a little more difficult to succeed in. You know what else
I think that the Knicks do a really good job of, maybe better than any team that plays the Cavs, is the tags from Helpman are forceful physical tags. They're like habitual line stepper tags, you know? Like when Josh Hart tags, he gets up into Mobley or Allen's chest, you know, and makes them feel him. And I think it just hurries up because, like, the Cavs have done great against drop coverage, against, you know, traditional centers this year. Like, they killed Embiid. They killed Jokic. They've killed Brook Lopez. Yep. But the Knicks drop in a way that is still physical. And I think that is just not common. Like the drop is kind of the passive choice, you know, for a lot of defenses. It's the, I'm just going to just roll back until you run into me. And the Cavs have gotten really good at killing that. They somehow drop without dropping right now. And I think it's a testament to the wings and the guards that kind of come in and crash but still scramble back. So they're not really giving up an advantage on those digs. And I think maybe that is part of why they have so successfully gunked up this Cavs offense.
I will say, to your point, though, if Niang or Wade hit a couple shots, then
you can't tag.
So also it hurts the drop even more so. And like, this is the weirdest part about the last month, is there are moments like we saw in this game, I guess, where because no Brunson, and in this case, well, because no Randall, and because in this case, no Brunson, I think the Knicks were actually, like, what you noticed was the Knicks being better at, like, tagging and being better at help. And we've seen it in these games that they've been shorthanded that just, okay, like, Precious Achiuwa is a plus defender. He may not have an offensive bone in his body, but we appreciate what he's brought on the defensive side of the ball. And, like, there's a couple 20 and 10 games in there because of what he can bring on the offensive glass. Like, Josh Hart is an outstanding help defender. And like, next to Ananobi, we kept seeing these shutdown, like, shut the water off lineups is what we called them, where like they were playing hard at the two. And it's like, so where are you going at the moment? Like, we just have all this length and all this size that we don't necessarily, like, you have no angle necessarily to score points. And yeah, it's the weirdest way that it worked that the Knicks were able to find a way to win last night with just the fact that they had like a plus defender on the floor at all times at every position. And when they went away from it, it was Bogey, who I gotta be honest, his defense hasn't been as bad as you think. His help defense probably hasn't been as bad as you think. His point of attack, he needs a rim protector, because you're going to get by him. And if he can at least direct you into a center, you're good. But he hasn't been as much of a traffic cone as I thought he'd be.
Yeah, but even the plus minus bears it out, you know. You look at like Sims, McBride, plus 17, plus 16, Hart, plus 16, Bogdanović, minus 8.
Yeah.
Like the Cavs did make some hay, even with Bogdanović having a pretty good offensive game. And I know he's been a little more up and down than you probably would have hoped he would be early on.
He's miscast is what he is, because I think they brought him here to play off of Julius, off of like next to Precious and Hart. And they were just like, OK, you have to be the entire bench unit. And part of that, guys, is that he came over with another player named Alec Burks, who has looked as washed can be. And I love Alec Burks. Like, the Knicks fans have this weird relationship with Alec Burks, where 3 years ago he was on the Knicks and it was like, oh, it's an Alec Burks game, 30 points from a bench player, we love him. Then the second year, Tibbs started him over Emmanuel Quickly inexplicably in a lost season. And it was like, he's still playing well, but I'd rather see what this Emmanuel Quickly guy is. Then they traded him to give cap space for Jalen Brunson. So we thanked him for his services. Every Knicks fan was like, now we want Burks back. Like, we want these heat checks that he's doing with Detroit to come to the Knicks. We need that.
I was pretty surprised by how universally like considered he was in that trade. A lot of people are like, they got Bogey and Burks.
And Burks, yeah.
And I was one of those people. So I was like, hell yeah.
I'm not so sure about this one, Jack.
No, I love Alec Burks.
He's been very, shout out to Nikias Duncan, who went on a Fred Katz's podcast that perfectly said what the Burks experience has been since returning to New York. It's very much like, you know why I'm here. Like, he's not running the offense. He's just like, he's made like 6 passes with purpose since rejoining the Knicks. And he knows that when he gets the ball, he has a green light. And to Tibbs's credit, the last 2 games, 11 minutes in each game, and Deuce's minutes have gone through the roof. So I do think it shows you
Alex's stock that Deuce played 47 minutes.
A little bit. That we saw no point Burks last night. And you know, Deuce McBride is the 5th player in the last 50 years to play at least 47 minutes in a regulation game he didn't start.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. That's how rare last night was.
Tibbs is a maniac.
He is, but the alternative was Alec Burks. Like, you know.
Well, it's certainly looking like Deuce is somebody that they can count on coming off the bench that's going to give them that outstanding support. The type of support that we get from our partner, Zoom. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more, with a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
I think when it comes to last night's game and just in general, like I talked about how I think if fans are going to wait and see with this Cavs team, like it need to see in the playoffs, I'm going to have my doubts or whatever the case may be. Like that's part of the game. Like when you become a team with expectations, fans are going to doubt you. Media is going to doubt you. When you have games like last night, it's going to only make that louder. That's part of the equation. From my standpoint, I know that this is a team that can play better. It's just, you know, when you look at these injuries and whatnot, you just hope that they can get it together, can get healthy, can get time to get the chemistry in the playoffs. And then when they get there, they're going to play to their capability. Because I think what we saw last night was far from that. But one guy that, you know, in all of these crossovers that we've had a lot of back and forth with this guy. And I need to get your take, because I thought he was one of the few guys that I was pleased with his game on both ends of the court. Every minute he played. Isaac Okoro, Andrew, are you finally coming around on my boy?
So it's a yes and a no, because the first half he was 3 of 3 from three. And now, like, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but he was 3 of 3 from three to start.
Then missed the five in a row after that.
Yeah. Missed five in a row after that. So the Knicks very much were like, sticking to the plan of, all right, like we're going to trust that you're going to start missing, even though the numbers this year have played out that he is someone you shouldn't do that to, you know?
Yes.
And I think I don't think Josh Hart will ever have a 40% 3-point season, but what we've asked of him,
but
is
he
like,
might have a series like that if he plays the Cavs.
That's the thing. He may just see a certain team and become we said Barkley before the show, but he actually is hitting threes instead. But
yeah. So the Okoro,
the Okoro part of this is like the fact that he's a willing shooter, I think, is good.
Yeah.
I think the weird part about last night is the 3-point shooter I feared the most. And I actually was curious to ask you guys this on the pod, was obviously Sam Merrill and the game he was having. JB makes the sub with 4 minutes left to bring, I believe it was Mobley
came back in
for Merrill, and Strus was on the floor instead of Merrill.
Yeah.
And like the guy just hit 7 threes and one from 70 feet. I was wondering, like, was that were you guys okay with that lineup? Because I think I'm at the point where a Curl's defense is necessary. Like, it is like someone you want to close with in a night you don't have Donovan Mitchell. Mm-hmm. But on a night that the Knicks don't have Jalen Brunson, or a guy that you necessarily like need to have that type of elite point of attack defender, wouldn't you rather? Like, I was surprised Sam Merrill wasn't in the game, because that stretch I was talking about where the Knicks just got stop after stop after stop.
So this, I think, is just the victim of a long-ass shift. Sam Merrill checked into the third quarter with 5 minutes left, 5 minutes and 20 seconds left. He had played to the four-minute mark of the fourth. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know Tom Thibodeau coaches your
team.
That's
why, like, I'm so used to these 18-minute shifts that it's like, what do you mean a long shift? So he didn't play the whole second half? What are you talking about?
Yeah, so, like, I think it was one of those things where it's like, okay, he's played 13, 14 minutes in a row. I think they needed to give him a blow, because they did go back to him with about 2 minutes left, if I recall correctly. I saw a lot of people griping on Twitter, but that one just felt like a... All right, Sam's about to pass out there. I did see, by the way, and we can have a little Sam Merrill segment here.
Yeah.
I did see some folks suggesting that they felt like, even though he had a very good game, indisputably, they did feel like the Knicks were attacking him. I actually want to challenge flag that one a little bit and say the Knicks were attacking him when Sam Merrill was the only one who did his job and got back on defense on time. There were like three or four Josh Hart coast-to-coast layups where the Cavs had four guys under their own free throw line when the shot went up, and Hart just pushed, and Merrill was the only one back. And yeah, if Josh Hart, like a big strong wing, has a full head of steam, yeah, he's going to go into Merrill's chest and get an easy layup. That's just transition basketball. I thought the Cavs did a really bad job of setting up, again, to your point, Justin, about the lack of focus and sharpness. Like, the devil's in the details on this kind of stuff, man. And I just don't think the Cavs were good on the details at all. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Andrew, you go, because I agree with Carter. I agree with him too much. It makes for bad podcasting, but it is what it is.
So this actually will probably answer both of the questions that I was just asked, whether, like, how do you feel about Isaac Okoro? One of our film, we do a film thread the next day. One of our film guys really highlighted how much they were attacking Merrill in the fourth quarter. Now, it wasn't necessarily like one-to-one, like getting switches like you do with, like in the playoffs when we saw that the Knicks were switching Garland onto or Mitchell onto Brunson and vice versa when you're getting Brunson in just a one-on-one matchup. It was very much to initiate your movement. You attack Merrill first, and then as soon as the Cavs rotate, that's when the first pass is made, then the second pass. And that's why, honestly, the Knicks, I was stunned to see this stat, 32 assists on 42 made shots last night. Like, the fact that that's how they were initiating offense, which is finding a weak link and then, you know, doing it that way, which then goes to the defense that you probably want to have a guy like Isaac Okoro out there. And if he's a willing shooter, then you do have to honor him on defense. And, you know, if he had hit one or two of those threes, like you were saying with George Niang, then he would have made the Knicks pay, and the Knicks, you know, gambled otherwise, and it paid off.
Yeah, for Okoro, I think it looks a lot better if the three threes he made weren't in a row and the five misses weren't in a row. Like, 3 of 8 is perfectly fine. And, like, you go back and his last 400 attempts, he's shooting over 39% from three. Like, he can knock them down. I think the progress to be a confident shooter is really, really big for him. You know, I keep reminding folks that he's only a couple months older than Evan Mobley. He's a guy that I'm very excited about. And to your point about, you know, Jalen Brunson being a weak link defensively for the Knicks, the first thing the Cavs ran was, okay, we know Brunson's going to be on Okoro, so we're going to get deep post position, and he scored on him, right? And I thought he did a good job of attacking the basket and doing that sort of thing. But I agree with Carter for the most part that I didn't think, until the fourth quarter, I didn't think Merrill really struggled on the defensive end. It has been a pretty consistent topic about, you know, Cavs have been going between either a 9-man or a 10-man rotation. And Carter and I were kind of advocating for going 9, because if you have, you know, someone like Okoro and Caris LeVert that are coming off the bench and deserve 26 to 28 minutes, it becomes really, really hard to give three other guys enough minutes to get comfortable. And you look, it's been 17 games now since Evan Mobley and Darius Garland came back. There's only one Cavalier in the rotation that has a negative net rating over that period of time. And it's Sam Merrill, unfortunately. Like, every other one's positive. Sam, it's minus 12.3 in 200 minutes. Like, I don't think that's 100% correlation. And frankly, like, I would like to still see Sam get more minutes, because I think the way that he bends the defense, like, I think it almost becomes a Wade versus Niang conversation at times. But when Dean isn't playing that well, like he hasn't recently, that makes things difficult. Like, the problem we're running into, other than being short so many guys and these guys we want to see play are going to end up playing, it's just that nobody seems to be in that groove, and they haven't really rediscovered their form from before the All-Star break.
Yeah, it was a group where every single player on the floor was playing well, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, maybe three or four guys are playing well, you know, a night right now. And that's just, you know, I think, like, they're indisputably playing really uneven basketball since the break.
Oh my goodness, Carter, I had these stats up, just looking at 200 minute sample for Merrill over the last 17 games, what would you guess the on-court offensive rating is?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
It's 103.5.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, and it's 119.9 with him off the court. Like, that's surprising. Like, that's one of those things, like, even though it is 200 minutes, there's got to be context. Like, I'm sure if I went back and watched it,
I mean, like, I'm watching, and I don't really think there's correlation. I really do think Sam's bringing something that
I think so too
isn't being brought. And, like, you know, I know there's some who would like to see, you know, Niang's minutes reduced. Like, it is tough right now when Dean isn't playing well, you know, because, like, I think in a different world, if Dean's playing the way he was playing when he was starting, he probably is taking a lot of minutes from George.
I agree.
Right now, because George is in quite the slump, pretty much a season long slump at this point. And, like, but he's not doing that. And then you look at, you're playing 2 6-1 guards, and if you don't play Wade or Niang, you're just too small, man. You can't, almost no teams can survive being that small on the perimeter. Like, especially since the Cavs aren't an exceptionally athletic team on the perimeter, with the exception of Donovan. So, like, I just think one of those fours is going to have to make hay. I would trust Merrill over either of them right now.
I would too. And he's going to need to play. Andrew, where do you fall on this? Because, you know, when you talk about building out a rotation, you know, Tibbs will get his reputation will come into a factor. But like the Knicks, as you can see, like they are a deep team, especially when they are healthy. Like, how deep do you prefer to see them go in a regular season? And obviously, you know, playoffs, it's going to shorten up a bit. But curious for your thoughts on that.
So as far as general philosophy is concerned, I mean, the Knicks have had two different versions of a Tibbs rotation. Like the first 2 years here, he was like very strict at a 10-man rotation. And like the first, it's honestly very much to what Orlando's doing this year, where it's Paolo do everything and just play even, like maybe a little bit above water with the starters. And then we'll play with the second unit and it'll be elite and we'll blitz teams. And they had the second unit with Derrick Rose and Emmanuel Quickley and our good friend Alec Burks and Obi Toppin, and the Knicks just like won games because they were taking advantage of backups. Then the second year, some of that process came back to earth and they signed Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier and some of their identity went away. And then last year, the big shift they made was, okay, Quickley's earned more minutes. A lot of the younger guys have earned more minutes. Let's go to a 9-man rotation and just have 9 really productive players. Like Quentin Grimes was playing more minutes. And then when Josh Hart came, he actually took Deuce McBride out of the rotation. The tough part about this year, to be honest, is that like I'm still kind of resigned to the 9-man rotation being the best one and maybe come playoff time even shortening it. The problem is I have not seen this team healthy since the third week of January. So I have no idea. Like Precious Achiuwa has been like a really good depth piece. We've called him an innings eater in New York. You know, we thought Deuce McBride and Jericho Sims was that, but I kind of think Deuce has earned a look in a playoff rotation at this point if his shooting is legit.
Yep. Depends on matchups too, right?
And that's what I'm curious about with Tibbs is like, does he have his guys and that's who he's going to go to, or will he actually be, it's a reputation he's earned at this point, but like, okay, the matchups are different now. Is this a series that like against the Cavs, that was clearly a Mitchell Robinson series. Then against the Heat, that was clearly an Isaiah Hartenstein series, and he never made that adjustment. So that's where you have to trust that your coach knows your personnel and that he's willing to be flexible. And if this is a series that calls for 10 guys, let's do it. If this is a series that calls for 8 guys, let's do it. I think in the regular season, it's more of a whatever's available, you know, from game to game, you go with that, you know.
And that's the thing I've appreciated about JB. Like, even in this post All-Star break stretch where things haven't been going as well, like, I do feel like the rotations have been very merit-based. Like, the first few games, Niang or played more than Wade because Wade just wasn't playing well. Like, on either end of the court, he had an illness, and I guess he's working his way back from that. But then Wade outplayed Niang in Chicago, and he got the minutes. And, you know, Sam comes out and he plays as well as he did against the Knicks. Like, I would expect him to get opportunities. And, you know, that's probably going to be what it is come playoffs is, all right, where can we get shooting? Like, where are we able to put shooting and best protect them? Like, what personnel does the other team have in order to expose either, you know, someone in the backcourt in Sam Merrill that you could potentially attack, or in the front court with George Niang? Like, what type of personnel is out there? Because we need the shooting, and that's just point blank period. That's what's needed out there. And it's frustrating. Like you said, I think when you just don't have the guys healthy and you're not getting enough run together, it makes things so hard. It's almost like when you're trying to integrate someone like Boyan or Alec Burks after the trade deadline, like even if they're fully in rhythm, it can take time to regain that chemistry and that second nature understanding of where guys are going to be on both ends of the court in order to click at a playoff level. And then for the Cavs, you know, to have Donovan not look like himself after the All-Star break and need this, I guess you would call it an operation or injection, for Darius to still not be fully comfortable coming back from that broken jaw, Karis not being healthy. Like, it just, you run out of redundancies in the rotation where you no longer have multiple guys that can provide rim pressure. You don't have multiple guys that you feel super confident in as shooters right now, even though the overall shooting numbers have been good. It's just it's a tough spot to be in. And I that's why they get paid the big bucks and a whole lot more than we ever will.
Well, first off, speak for yourself.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. You're a big shot. Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
I've been pondering a little bit about this, and like, I'm sure Knicks fans don't want to hear very many comparisons of like that put the Cavs on the Knicks level, and I think a lot of people have the Knicks above the Cavs right now in playoff pecking orders, and you know, for good reason. The playoffs were a disaster for the Cavs and really, really good for the Knicks, and the Knicks got better. The one thing I do think that these two teams have in common is the challenge that comes with being built around a bunch of B plus A minuses as opposed to a true A plus. And something that I've been thinking about with regard to the Cavs eras with LeBron is you have margin for error because your top end floor is just so high. Whereas, like, I think we've both seen both of our teams get to heights that feel really, really dominant, but it's really hard to turn those into prolonged stretches because one guy gets banged up and isn't quite right. And then like, you're just seeing them not hit that ceiling consistently. Whereas when you have a Jokic, it's just a lot easier to get to that ceiling, you know? And like, I think both these teams are going to have to struggle with kind of waiting for the stars to align and just the right, you know, 3-week period where everyone's healthy and playing well. Because unlike these teams with the tier one super duper duper stars, like, you kind of need everyone to be swimming in the same direction at the same speed in order to kind of find your way and hit, you know, because both these franchises want to build a title contender.
Andrew, are you going to fight him and put Brunson on the Jokic tier?
Oh, not yet. Not yet.
Not yet.
There was a stretch in January where I would have took a bullet for the guy, but
before the Cavs-Knicks series, you might have put Quickly there.
Listen, there was a stretch last year where Quickly I thought was better than Jared Allen. Quickly is no longer on my basketball team, so I hope he's doing well in the state of Toronto.
By the way, I haven't looked this up. I can't believe RJ Barrett, 56% from the field, 42% from three as a Raptor. What's going on there?
Dude, a 61% effective field goal percentage. Isn't it great when a team doesn't care about winning and they just focus on you getting better?
And I will caution people that talk about stats on some of these teams that are down below. It's different when you're winning. And I think that's something that the Cavs have experienced, even compared to, you know, the 45 win season with Garland, Mobley and Allen kind of, you know, powering that prior to Mitchell arriving. It's a different thing when teams are fully serious.
There's cute winning and there's cute stats, and then there's like, you're in it stats.
Can I ask how you guys talk about Markkanen? Like, how do you, because like, I actually like don't wish RJ well, and the Raptors have been a weird, like, they're the C plus, the C team. Like, the Knicks have their, you have the Knicks team, and you have this spinoff show in Canada that we get to watch on League Pass, right?
I love Raptor slanders. Keep going.
Right. So just like we get to go watch MSG up north of the border every now and then. And it's like, oh yeah, I get to tune in for the RJ and Quick show at night. That's fine. But like, because the Knicks are off to bigger and better things, I haven't missed them, you know, in the way that I think some people in a quote unquote hive might. How do you guys process marketing? What he's been in
We don't
Utah?
Really talk about him.
Really ever. Okay.
Not well, in, never not comes like up on just the pod, in like yeah. a, yeah, it's not like a podcast thing. We don't really talk about him privately other than like, it's fun that he's doing good.
Yeah. Like I'll share a highlight or something and be like, hell yeah, look at our guy.
Yeah. Like I think we're both pretty fond of him. And
same goes for Colin, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. Honestly, I think we probably talk about Colin more than Lowry because he was with us for so long. But yeah, it's not like a, you know, and you'll see it in certain pockets of the fan base where they'll be like, I can't believe we gave up this guy and all our picks. But, you know, in like probably on a value, you know, scale, someone might argue that the Cavs, you know, didn't win the trade or it was close to even or whatever it may be. But like the practical reality that the Cavs are super duper good and have played, you know, are a 50 win team without LeBron for the first time and you know, ever since the 90s. Like it's just like I just don't think he comes up much. Not that you know, and I think there's plenty of interesting stuff. I don't think, by the way, that Lowry has the breakout he has if JB doesn't play him at the three in his year with the Cavs.
And well, I remember
he doesn't go through an off season planning to play small forward and planning and working on all his on ball skills.
Well, remember we had Fedor on the podcast prior to the Mitchell trade, and it was, hey, like Lowry's now had an off season of preparing to play small forward. The Cavs feel like he's the closest thing to a fourth member of the core, and he's on the verge of a breakout. Like that was. And we got ripped. Like we had people adding the podcast and our Discord being like, there's no Lowry breakout. What is this and whatnot? Like we root for him. And I think, you know, obviously you have to pay top dollar when you're going to get a star like Donovan Mitchell. And Donovan has been everything and more that has been promised. I think people forget, like when you look at how the Cavs have kind of navigated that luxury tax line and you know, found a way to use the mid-level exception, and they still have one this summer. Like they saved money in that transaction, and the Lowry extension is going to be comparable and all that kind of stuff. So there's a whole lot of other factors that they don't go into it. But like from a rooting standpoint, like I think Carter and I both root for Lowry, root for Colin. We want to see those guys do well and whatnot. So it doesn't come up the same way that RJ does.
That's where I'm at with RJ, by the way, and Quick for that matter, because I loved watching Quickly play with the Knicks. But like
super high on him. Yeah.
Yeah. And like a lot of people the day of the trade was like, this is going to eventually become the Emmanuel Quickly trade. It's like, all right, well, the Knicks may eventually make the conference finals without him. So hopefully both teams win.
You want trades to be win-wins. Like, honestly, I don't think there's a lot of front offices that aren't incredibly smart right now, right? Like most of the time you're looking for, we have an excess in one area or we're looking to consolidate. And typically in a consolidation trade, like you're giving up more because you have an understanding that you can only have five guys on the basketball court. So having this collection of nine great players is great and all, but you can only put five on the court at one time, right? So that's typically like a feature of those consolidation trades. So I think that Knicks deal for OG was a win-win. I obviously, you know, we're thrilled with Donovan. And I think the most important thing that's come with the Mitchell trade, like I know some people act like, oh, they thought they were a contender or whatnot. That hasn't been the messaging at media day. Like it's been, all right, we want year one of Donovan. It was, we want to avoid the play-in. This year it's, we want to win a round of the playoffs, right? Like it's understanding it's understanding that getting Donovan in-house raises expectations. It raises how teams prepare for you. You're going to get everyone's best punch. Like, and understanding that even though it's going to come with increased scrutiny and you're going to get ripped when you lose a game like you did against the Knicks, that's part of the development process. And like when it comes to Garland, when it comes to Mobley and all these guys, Okoro, growth isn't linear, but it's also not always promised, right? And I think putting guys in winning situations in a winning context, that's going to get the best out of them. And it's going to help, you know, they're not just developing skills or putting up points on a bad team and then they have to figure out how to play with other guys. They're figuring that out as they improve. So on the one hand, I understand how it's a Rorschach test. When, you know, growth isn't linear and you have good games and you have bad games, the pessimists are going to focus on the bad. The optimists are going to focus on the good and the truth's going to be in the middle. Right now, coming off that game, the pessimists are having their
fun on that one.
No one feels good there. But I understand that that's all part of the process, and it sucks. I hate it. I want to see them, you know, come out and look like themselves when they play the Knicks. But you know, I just hope that this doesn't turn into like a Cavs Raptors situation where you just don't see the best version of them at all. There's plenty of versions of those type of matchups where, like at the start, They completely look like outclassed and they're not playing at that level and they manage to, you know, improve internally and get over that hill. Then there's other times where it doesn't happen. So I'm obviously hoping it's the latter, but skepticism comes when you lose like that.
Can I ask about some of the reaction? Because you just said Cavs Raptors. Like I remember how one-sided those matchups were. I know the Knicks have had the Cavs number, but would you guys say that? So, okay, here's the I have two questions. I have two legit questions. Like,
go for it.
Was yesterday frustrating because the Cavs played poorly and lost to, like, an Eastern Conference team that they're in?
No, it's the Knicks.
Really, would you say the Knicks are, like, in your head? In particular, but in the Cavs fans' heads. Yeah.
Especially, you know, like, I think for Cavs fans, you have the trauma that you have. The more casual Cleveland sports fan that's following on a surface level, it's, oh, well, yes, they've made all these improvements this year, but they just went out and did that against like what's left of the Knicks, right? Like, you're going to have that kind of stuff. Like, honestly, I think like if the Cavs shorthanded come out and beat Boston by 20, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the vibes are going to be worse than if they beat the Knicks and then lost to the Celtics by 20. Like, I think beating the Knicks because of, you know, the playoff baggage, I think that's more important.
Yeah, I think the reality is, like, I don't think it's as, like, heavy as you're kind of, like, taking it, you know, when Justin references, like, he's talking about a potential outcome, and, like, I think
drawing
about...
drawing upon experiences and whatnot.
I think about when the Heat ran the Bucks off the floor before the Bucks won their first title, when they just humiliated them. And, like, think about if the Bucks lost to a shorthanded Heat team that next year, you know? Yeah. Fan base is going to be in shambles.
Rather than like, Bryn Forbes outscoring Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, like we think we're something, but we're getting run off the floor by a team that already ran us off the floor in the highest setting. I think that's really, like, I think that is a, you know, if you're a Cavs fan, you're hoping it's exactly that, where, you know, he embarrassed the Bucks in the postseason and the Bucks come out the next year angry and sweep them out of the first round. Like you hope for something like that, but like there's two outcomes here there. I guess there's probably some middle ground there, but like the two most extreme outcomes. There's two extreme outcomes here. And one extreme is Cavs Raptors where like, no matter what, like they're so entrenched in their heads that the series is over before it starts and Kyrie's throwing it off the backboard the first possession of the game to LeBron. And then there's the Bucks where Giannis and Drew and Chris Middleton went and just absolutely wrecked shop because they learned all the lessons they needed to learn. If a game like that, even against a skeleton crew Knicks team, I think if you're a Cavs fan that kind of is worried about the mental strength of the team, you're going to go, well, there's more evidence. We haven't figured it out. Yeah. So I think it was going to be an angst-generating loss no matter what. The way it happened, you know, and, you know, like, we don't have to talk about grabbing chains, but, like...
That's my other question. Did you want some fisticuffs or some tables to get moved
As an evolved adult who doesn't believe in fighting
in violence? Because okay,
as
you're
a father,
now. Okay, got it.
As a father, I don't. It is disappointing. To see that happen. Hart was very clever because he went behind. Like Donovan was looking the other way, and he reached around and grabbed it. So it's like Donovan's like turning around like, what?
Yeah,
and he's already gone. So yeah. it's the
Did you hear what he said? Like he told Fred Katz what he said. So apparently Hart and Mitchell are close, right?
Yeah.
Shout out CAA. And apparently when Hart hits the three, Mitchell's looking the other way and he heard George Niang talking smack and he was going to turn around and be like, oh, that's tough. And then he just saw Mitchell's chain and was like, oh, that's nice. And then just ran up like it was a playful thing that to us we're like, that's how dare you like get humiliated like that? But to the basketball players, it was probably that. I will say in the moment as a Knicks fan, it very much was not only are we going to win this, but now this has become embarrassing.
Who was the football player that took the chain? I don't remember. Was that
Rick? I know who you're talking about. Both players.
Was it Brandon Marshall?
Akeem Talib.
Took
someone's chain twice. Yes.
Yeah, that was crazy.
It was Crabtree, right?
Crabtree.
Crabtree.
That's a great callback.
Look at the sports brain here. To answer your question, as a reformed brawler myself, no, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see. It would be to me, it's performative. Like I think when you're not going out there, like they treated it, felt like from an energy standpoint and from a focus and execution standpoint, it felt like a game against the Wizards. And I think the fans had like there was a disproportionate gap between how much we cared about it and how it looked on the court. And like that's frustrating. But you know, at my core, I'm a film guy. I like watching the games. Right. I watch it twice because I go on the podcast. I nerd out with stats, but then all of a sudden the Hooper in me comes out and I'm just like, there's a point for athletes when you're coming along where you go from loving winning to hating losing. And I think that switch needs to be flipped at some point for the Cavs where, you know, just really taking pride on taking care of business against these teams that you should beat, understanding where you got to make a statement and doing that. And I think the Cavs, I'm not macro worried about this, but it is kind of one of those repeating trends that they're going to have to iron out that, you know, they need to have those conversations in the locker room. And from everything we've seen this season, this is a tough team that's a resilient team that's managed a lot of injuries, that there's been a lot of ups and downs and whatnot. There's 22 games left. You feel different about the team after every 10-game segment. So we're probably going to experience two more seasons from here on out. So I think that's what I'm kind of keeping an eye on is, you know, how do they respond to this? What do they learn from it? And understanding that, you know, skepticism and whatnot and frustration over a game like that, like that comes with the territory. It is what it is. And I'm not going to sit here and tell people how to feel.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay. So you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Yeah, I said in the Discord, I said sometimes you earn the takes, you know? Mm. You lose a game like this against this team in under those circumstances with that end. Like, that's quite a series of circumstances to ask, you know, fans not to be frustrated and bummed out, you know? And ones who, you know, Like, I will always kind of push back against the people who just decide stuff, you know, like, it's really easy to be loud that about a negative, a future negative outcome, because, you know, only one team ever wins. So, you know, in the end, so you can always, it's a lot easier to find your way to being right about a pessimistic
29-30 chance.
Yeah, like, it's like you can always point to it almost no matter what. Like, I will understand those people that are viewing that game as confirmation. Again, I'm not concerned about them going out and setting a hard screen on Hart the next time they play. I'm concerned with the next time Hart grabs them while they're coming off a pin down, that they shake free and hit a bucket as he closes out. Like, that, you know, like, think about all the, you know, all the antagonists over the course of basketball history. When a team overcomes them, it's not because they started fighting them.
It's because they started beating them.
Yeah. And, like, I'm much more interested in the Cavs beating the Knicks than fighting, than winning the fight.
Yeah. I guess that it goes not hand in hand fighting wise, but I don't know. I wonder how much you guys, I mean, you guys tell me better than anybody, how much you echo the majority of the fan base. I only dabbled in a little bit of Cleveland media today, and I also wonder how much the team is feeling it. Like, Donovan, I know that's your boy, but, like, they just came into our building and punked us with their D team. Like, like, let him admire your chain after the game. I don't know. It's weird because I wanted to come here and be like, measured, and I didn't want to be mean and be like, oh, the Knicks own you guys. But it sounds like you guys are actually conceding that as of right now, it's tough not to make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs can't score against the Knicks right now.
Yeah.
They haven't scored for 8 games against the Knicks. And really, going back into the regular season last year, you know, other than that one magical Dean Wade, Kevin Love, 3-point explosion, it's up to, you know, like 11 games. Yeah. So, like, right now, they have not been able to figure out how to consistently get buckets against this team that does not have the profile of a team that they should not consistently be able to get buckets against. You know, this was a great offense in the regular season last year that was dead last in the postseason. This has been a pretty good offense this year, somehow worse, despite having better offensive personnel, for, you know, a litany of reasons, but, like, they've been able to score against the Joel Embiid Sixers. They punked the Nuggets. They ran them off the floor. They beat the Clippers at home. Like, they've beaten some great teams this year. Yeah. They've beaten great teams. They've beaten great defenses this year. The Knicks are, for some reason, a bother to their offense. And maybe it's just, you know, and, like, there is, I will always concede the chance that there is some sample stuff. You know, again, they generated a lot of great looks against the Knicks last night, and they missed a lot of great looks in the non-Sam Merrill division. However, like, all we have are the numbers in front of us, and the numbers tell me the Cavs are scoring 100 points per 100 possessions against the Knicks this year, and that's not good enough.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and be defensive about it. Like, I think they can play better. I think they have the leaders in the locker room to do it. Like, a thing I firmly believe in this podcast is highlighting both the good and the bad, because if you're being honest and highlighting what's not going well, you can accurately point out when those trends start to change, when you start taking those steps in the right direction. And I think the biggest thing that a young team has to do in order to get to the level of a contender is being able to impose their style of play on the game, no matter who the opponent is. Like, if you're an up-tempo team, you're going to play that game up-tempo, even if the other team is trying to muddy it up. Like, if the Knicks are being physical, you're still going out there playing through it, executing, and the game feels like a Cleveland Cavaliers style of game. And right now, I think the Knicks get them out of their style more than anybody else, whether that's matchup, whether that's a mental thing, whatever that is, that seems to be one of those hurdles that they have to clear. So I don't see it as a fatal flaw. I see it as something that they have to address. And as Carter mentioned, like, a lot of weird stuff. I hate that I would have loved to see 4 games between these teams with both teams fully healthy, Knicks after the trade and everything. Like, I would love to be able to do that, because then I can go in the film and look at the adjustments that are made. Once again, we're not going to get anything out of what a playoff matchup would look like from these games, but I still think that there are takeaways and there's things that you can learn from these games that the Cavs need to work on moving forward. And man, like, it doesn't get easy. They said on the broadcast, Cavs have the eighth toughest schedule from here on out. They're about to play, I believe, their third and fourth set of three games in four nights in the first 2 weeks of the post-All-Star break stretch. Then they go on that 13-game trip where they don't play in the same city again and play a lot of good teams. So they're going to have to go earn it. They're going to have to go earn it shorthanded.
Especially after they didn't earn it, you know, beating the Bucks. They lost to the Bulls. They lost to Philly twice. They lost to Orlando at home. They lost to this Knicks team. Like, this was supposed to be, even though they played a lot of games in this recent stretch, this was the kind of the stretch where you needed to get fat.
You needed to put hay in the really barn. Hard. You needed to put some hay in the barn here and get ready.
There you go. So it's going to be tough.
Is that, you know that one?
Yeah, I just went full Captain America. I understood that reference.
There you go. Hell yeah.
City Boy understands that you put hay in a barn and fire. It's like very like flammable, right?
Yeah, it's getting ready to stock up for a long, cold winter. But, you know, right, you instead guys, of a winter, it's the playoff.
At this point, like, the two seed is feels a little less likely than it does to feel likely, just because the Cavs haven't found their rhythm, and that's a challenge.
And honestly, you know, injuries more than that.
And injuries. So, like, there's a lot of reasons. I got to ask you, Andrew, like, what is your hope for where the Knicks end up? Do you think they can sneak back into that 2-3 range, or are you kind of resigned to a 4-5?
That's a good question to get us out of here.
So I got to be totally honest with you. The last month and a half has just been, like, waiting for an injury update that I'm at the point where the seeding just has been so far in the back of my mind. Like, get in, get healthy. I think you're going to have to go through Boston no matter what round you face him in anyway. So if you're the 4, fine. You hopefully play him in the second round. If there is a scenario where they're 6 and they can avoid Boston, and this may be
bad basketball karma.
Well, so this may be the biggest jerk thing I say on the pod, but would I rather face the Heat in a 4-5 or the Cavs in the 6-3? And I kind of like the Knicks' chances, and if they're the 6 seed and the Cavs drop to 3.
You'd rather play the team that you beat in the playoffs last year and went 2-1 against in the regular season versus the team that eliminated you? No, like, crazy. It's the exact same thing that we're talking about, right? Like, so, when you have that playoff experience, you go with what's comfortable. You go with what you've seen, right?
Yeah, to be clear, though, like, if they can get back into it, I think they lost too much ground with the Cavs and with the Bucks, for that matter, during this stretch where they've just been about 500 trying to tread water until people come back. It really depends, like, the fact
that's the tiebreaker with the Bucks.
They won the first 3 matches against the Knicks. And here's going to be the most annoying part. You know how, like, remember back in December when the NBA had a tournament and there was a reason to attract viewers and all that? So you know what the Knicks reward was for making the in-season tournament?
They played the Bucks a fifth time.
They played the Bucks a fifth time, and because they lost that game, they played in Boston a fifth time. Their extra 2 games this year were in Milwaukee, in Boston. So yeah, when they're 2 games behind,
you got a Pistons game relocated to the Garden, where Dante DiVincenzo showed that the linebacker position is no longer dead.
I would yes, but I also, if we don't forget, 2 weeks earlier, facing Goebel decided that half-court shots can garner 3-point fouls too. So
the long arc of the universe bends towards justice.
It's even, okay, as far as I'm concerned. Also, I don't know if you've seen Detroit's record this year, but I don't think you can say relocating a game from Detroit to the Garden had any factor on whether or not the Knicks had a good chance to win that game or not.
Hey, I mean, that was close. Came down to the wire. Home court bounces. Yeah, no, you're right.
The irony is that the guys for Detroit that led that fourth quarter comeback were Quentin Grimes, Evan Fournier, and Malachi Flynn. I kid you not. The former Knicks almost beat the Knicks in the Garden that night.
You say kid you not like I wasn't watching that. Trying to spite root for you guys. No, yes. I understand. Like, honestly, now I'm in the same boat. Like, I think 2 seeds should be the aim because you need to have goals for the regular season and, you know, like, go out there and try to give yourself the best path. But first round matchup's going to be difficult no matter who you play in the East. As someone that is completely traumatized by my own injury, what Giannis went through pregame with his Achilles scared the hell out of me. That video looked bad. So be careful, Giannis. Like, please, please, please be careful.
Can I ask you guys if this is a crazy thought, though? Like, say the Cavs do get the 2 seed, right?
Yeah.
Like, is avoiding Boston and falling to the 3-6, like, still... Like, is that crazy if you're a Knicks fan to be like, you know what? If we're healthy, let's just avoid the Boston side of the bracket.
I'm a basketball karma guy. I don't think you fall. I think you just win as many games as you can. And what you don't do is give yourself bonus points for getting the conference finals just because you didn't play Boston in the second round. You know, like you should just evaluate how
quality of wins matters.
You should just evaluate.
The thought though is that as the playoffs go on, you get healthier. Like that's the calculation I'm wondering.
That's part of it. But honestly, the Cavs aren't going. If the Cavs don't get healthy and get a rhythm before playoffs, I think their ability to advance in the playoffs is going to be hard. So I'm not thinking, you know, you're getting healthier as the playoffs go along.
Yeah.
I want to see them get into a groove because last year they matched their winning percentage post All-Star break compared to before, but they haven't really ever peaked after the All-Star break. Like it didn't feel as good down the stretch last year. Yeah, exactly. I think they need to get into that mindset of we need to be playing our best basketball rather than, okay, we've kind of locked up the 4 seed or last year and all right, we're going to kind of coast to the finish and then, oh, we have a week and a half off and now we're playing the Knicks, all right? Like the mentality, I think you have to kind of find that groove. You have to be trying to get better than your best version of yourself the rest of the way here. So I think they're going to be smart when it comes to injuries. They don't want, you know, Mitchell playing hurt in the playoffs again or anything like that. But no, I'm with Carter. I'm a believer in basketball karma and I'm also a believer in momentum. So making the most of a very tough finish to the season. I think that would earn them some brownie points and for fans like myself, that would earn us some confidence. For others, they probably need to see the Cavs beat the Knicks in the playoffs before they feel good about this team.
I do think the Cavs end up with the 2 seed for whatever my opinion is worth.
If you look at the schedule, it's going to be tough. Milwaukee is playing much, much better as of late.
Milwaukee's also got the second most difficult schedule remaining.
I hear you. I hear you. Well, I mean, obviously, this is why it's so stupid, because if Giannis misses 3 weeks, then
that's the calculation to make it too. Yeah,
like it's just all so messy and impossible to project. I think it's very possible they would get the 2 seed. I think that would obviously be great just to play a play-in team, but you know, again, maybe Orlando holds on to 6 and the easier matchup is at 3. It's just so, like, that's why I'm just like, just win as many games as you can, be as good of a team as you can be, leave the political machinations to someone else, because like the reality is it's such a crapshoot anyway, and there's so many variables here. It's like trying to control the weather, you know? Like, you're just not going to control things to the degree you want to. So you can control being as good of a team as you can be, and that's what the team should do.
Yeah.
I sound like such a cliche coach right now.
I know what we can control.
Not wrong.
How long these damn podcasts go? This was a long one. We got Andrew's smiling face for far too long. You are so generous with your time. Really appreciate it, buddy. Always,
God bless you.
Always nice to have these crossovers with Knicks Film School. As I said on your podcast, as much as I really want to beat the Knicks, I don't feel animosity towards you guys. I think that, you know, you're a good
foil. I feel
foil.
Animosity just towards Andrew.
I mean,
that's
a me thing, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And Matt Cree too. Matt Cree, I'm going to give him a swirly or something along those lines.
By the way, I must say, I don't listen to other teams' podcasts. I just don't, as a general, like, you know, life is getting busier, you focus on your content consumption. I will say I listen to more Knicks Film School than any other podcast covering teams. I listen to probably at least one a week, and you guys do about a trillion episodes a week. So that's pretty good, I would say.
Prolific.
You guys are awesome. The variety of your content is great, and it's just fun listening to your perspectives, even when you guys get too high in your own supply. You know, it's still really fun to listen. I did not listen after this one. I couldn't.
I don't blame you.
Take it.
I will
but it's a great pod. It's a great pod. Everyone should go follow.
I will. First of all, thank you. Sincerely, thank you. I appreciate that. And as I've told you guys before, the standard bearers and guys who have been in the niche podcast game forever, a lot of what you guys do is the model. And so I appreciate the kind words coming from two people that I greatly respect. I will say just two things. First of all, on behalf of Knicks Nation and Knicks Film School, and our listeners. I just want to say Knicks in five. And then I'd also just, if you want to listen to it, like a low-key Knicks funeral where we were going through it, the beginning of the post game last night, because there was no certainty of what was going on with Jalen Brunson. It felt very much like the Jets game that they beat the Bills on Monday Night Football. And it was like, oh, great, that was fun. And then in the tunnel walking out of the stadium, it was like, oh, by the way, Aaron Rodgers is out for the year with the torn Achilles. We were waiting for that notification. So if you'd like to go through this,
I don't get what
became a
that.
Celebratory, you don't get enjoyment out of that. Okay.
No, I don't
but,
like
but
it.
But subscribe to the Knicks feed, people.
There you go.
Andrew,
Grump
thank
is
you so
fun.
Much.
Sad is not fun. Yeah. Go ahead, Justin. Take us home.
I like failures, especially injury, like reveling in injuries. No, that's not me at all. Big thanks, Andrew, for coming on the podcast. We really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are checking out Knicks Film School. If you watched this on YouTube, thank you so much. We appreciate your support. Like, subscribe, click notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot or review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.